Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Brad.
Yes.
Do you know how we fund the program Going Off Track?
I know exactly how we fund it. There's one source of income for us, and that is patreon.com/goingofftrack, where our loving patrons give us money and we give them bonuses.
Patreon? Stop making up words. It's a great place. We do a weekly Thursday night fireside chat. Brad takes all the embarrassing things I say in podcasts that he doesn't put into podcasts and puts it on the Patreon. Funny pictures of Brad in the 90s, usually naked or wearing a wristband. Please sign up. Brad, what's the address?
Patreon.com/goingofftrack.
Hi, Brad.
Hey, I'm here.
Hey, Brad. Guess what?
You joined the Boy Scouts of America.
Ooh, no. But I did look it up the other day to remember that their motto is always be prepared.
It's a good motto. Yeah, I use it a lot, and I was not a Boy Scout.
So what's actually happening is I'm on antibiotics for a tick bite.
No way.
Yeah, another one got me.
Did you get a thing? Did you get a circle, a ring?
Yeah, so I got bit, you know. I was taking a shower. I was like, oh, what's this stuff? Oh, there you go. You know, grabbed it real fast, threw it down the drain. I'm pretty sure I got all of it. Tiny little guy.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it was like just itchy for a couple days, and then I got that corresponding ring. And I was like, oh, cool. So I made some calls, got on some antibiotics to try to avoid it. But here's the point to this, okay? It's not for a pity
party. To freak me out because I fucking hate ticks.
They're weird, but this is part of it. Is like, is there a more perfect human assassin like in the world than a tick?
No.
Like, what a... It's almost as if it was designed for the exact intention of what it does. You know, like, we're going to make it tiny that you can't even see it. It can just fit in the nooks of your like soft, fat human body. You know, it so easily gets in. And then if it manages to bite you, this tiny thing can literally like paralyze you and give you these diseases. And when I think about it, it kind of leads to like a bigger thing for me, which is like, you know, you add up them, mosquitoes, poison ivies, allergies, all sorts of different, you know, serpents and biters like all throughout the ground that can, you know, get you an unsuspecting. It's treacherous out there, Brad. And treacherous to the point that when I like lay it out all like this, I'm like, oh, like we're under attack. And we're not supposed to be here, maybe. And the older I get, I maybe lean into the fact that we're not from this planet a little bit more. Because why would it be trying to take us out so hard?
You have it exactly wrong. You have it exactly wrong. And I'm going to tell you.
Tell me why.
I am a very non-religious person. Mm-hmm. Sort of, you could say I'm vehemently opposed to organized religions. I do have a very strong faith, and I do believe that there is one true religion that is completely provable, has a real goddess that you can see and touch, and it is Gaia, the Earth Mother.
Yes.
You know, she fulfills like every description of God that anybody has ever come up with. And like, not only that, but it's a living organism and has, you know, its own immune system.
Right.
And this is white blood cells, dude, or mosquitoes and ticks. She's getting a little itchy. Yeah, we're like...
So where are the germs? Where the disease? Where are the germs?
We're bacteria, and in a certain, you know, and we're fine, and we're actually healthy up to a certain point, and she's getting a little itchy, man.
Right.
And she's releasing some white blood cells to kind of clean things up.
All right, so let me... I get that, and I think it's cool. And I mostly agree with what you're saying fundamentally. The thing that makes me go maybe another way is the fact that there's like no other species on the planet dealing with the things we're dealing with. So your mother Gaia is either very specifically angry with us and trying to get rid of us.
Yeah, exactly.
Or we like jumped on this planet. And now she's trying to shake it off, like fleas off a dog. Because it's not like a deer is out in the forest and he's like, oh, yeah, I got the poison ivy again, you know?
But deer do get Lyme disease. They do get ticks and, right. and Lyme disease.
They get ticks.
Animals do.
Yeah. That's true. My dog does have allergies.
But yeah, I guess we both could actually be right that we do come from off planet and this is her immune system.
Yeah. Well, that's the wormhole I went down when I got a tick bite recently.
God, I hate
so
ticks.
I'm on the antibiotics. I'm on the probiotics. If anyone can think of any more biotics I need to be on to not get Lyme's disease, lay it on me. But yeah, what are you going to do? I'm sure I'll be fine.
Say love.
Try not to make a big deal out of it, you know?
It's a good attitude.
Thanks, pal. So we had the Rat Boys on.
Yeah, fun.
Julia and Dave.
Very pleasant.
Very, very pleasant. I was looking forward to it because I'm doing the research for this. And I'm like, oh, these seem like very pleasant people to talk to. I'm looking forward to this conversation. Yeah. And a really good group. I actually was like, they're one of those bands that I got thrown off by their name a long time ago. Like,
right.
Someone they like they went on tour with someone I was friends with like years ago. And I was like, oh, it's a cool name. I'm like, but I'm just assuming they're like snotty and young and either too indie or too like punk for me, you know? So,
right.
so there's kind of like, oh, okay. Like, I'm sure they're super cool, but too cool for me at this point, you know? And then I finally stumbled on some tracks and my first instinct being old was I heard like Juliana Hatfield.
Oh, and, okay.
And, you know, and like the Juliana Hatfield 3 record, which, you know, every indie rocker at some point in the mid 90s had a huge Juliana Hatfield thing because she was on those Lemonheads records
right.
everyone loved. And, you know, I heard the voice and kind of the feel of the whole thing. And it kind of gave me, yeah, a little bit of like Juliana Hatfield musically, like a little like Sidekicks or something like that. Just that really like nice kind of hi-fi indie rock stuff.
Yeah.
But then, like, as the progression goes through the years, you know, you're seeing a lot more breadth to it, like all this steel guitar, which kind of gives it the country feel, the newer record, not the newer songs, having all this fuzz and making it spacier. So it's definitely a band. I'm looking forward to their journey, especially after getting to talk to Julie and Dave a little and seeing how kind of thoughtful and intrinsic, you know, the music actually is and the songwriting. Lyricism. So looking forward to the pack.
Yeah.
Well, let's listen to the interview. It was fun.
Let's do it.
It's going on.
We are recording now. So
in case you missed it, you know, everybody, we were just talking about horns and if having horns would be good or not. I don't know. I think what's a good practical application to growing an actual horn on your head? Protection.
Self-defense,
right?
For sure.
Self-defense. You could hang things on it.
Yeah. You could open some boxes, you know?
Yeah. You'd never need like a pocket knife.
Nope.
You could make it like kind of ornamental, like really cool, like jewelry and stuff.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It might help you keep socially distanced from others.
That's true too.
There you go.
Man, I read it. I've run into this problem again already, Brad. I took my child to like a track and field thing yesterday, you know, and I haven't had too many opportunities to be in the presence of like a lot of other parents and stuff yet. And I felt like the chubby kid with too many earrings at the like school lunch table again. I felt really weird, man. I don't know if I do it to myself or I'm just a freak, but I don't know. I don't know what to do with these people. I'm looking around. I'm like, shit, I'm the only one here in black jeans.
Benny.
Like, should I get some Under Armour shit to like wear to these?
Dude, just revel in it because you know what? Someday you're going to be a norm just like everybody else, dude.
Oh,
yeah.
Stop it. I don't think I'm ever going to settle into the middle like that.
Oh, I'm such a norm, dude. Place. I feel like such a norm. I felt like that, I think, in the early days of being a parent, mainly because I just found that all the other parents were so square. Like,
right.
Or just norms. And I'm like, aren't any cool people breeding? And like, and then you kind of come to terms with like your new friends and you still have your old friends, but,
so you just get lulled to sleep and then you just wake up in Vineyard Vine shit.
You just wake up and you're like a dad.
Yeah. Oh man.
I'm a total norm now, dude. I look at my sneaker collection. I'm like, I would never have worn any of this shit. Like even 10 years ago.
Wow. Well, you also have the New York City like thing to live up to. Like when you leave the house and you live in Manhattan, you know, like you're probably trying to still look kind of cool.
I don't think so. Or at least I mean, acceptable. Yeah, I don't want to look like a total douche, but I don't leave the house in sweatpants.
Julia, where do you land on this? Do you consider yourself through the course of your life like closer related to norms or freaks?
That's a really good question. I mean, well, I have like very little fashion sense. So as far as that goes, I'm probably closer to norm. I love like wearing like jerseys and stuff, like, yes. Like sports stuff. And that is, as far as like, I don't know, I feel like a lot of musicians have really cool like stage outfits and stuff like that. And I kind of judge myself against those people. And I'm like, damn, I need to step up my game. But
well, you got kind of the Robert Smith going on if you're doing the jerseys.
There you go. You know? Yeah. See, I just feel comfortable. I love repping a team, you know, but I was never good at sports. So I always enjoyed just like wearing the stuff, even though I, you know, could never ever sure. play. But yeah, I don't know. I'm probably closer to a norm if I'm being honest. I like lots of norm stuff, but I mean, everyone's got a little freaky side too. So. It's
hidden. You say like the people who have like the cool, who do you think has like the coolest style that you look at on stage, man. And you're just like, oh man, they got it going on.
Man, probably like, I mean, Mitski always wears crazy stuff. Mm. Even like, I don't know if you guys know Halfwaif at all, or like Charlie Bliss has crazy, like Eva from Charlie Bliss has crazy awesome outfits. And that's the thing. I've never like been one to kind of just play dress up in my room.
Right.
I mean, no disrespect. It's just never really been my thing. So like, it doesn't come naturally to me, but someday might be cool to, experiment a little bit. Who knows? But
yeah, get a little,
When you're in a band, like if you're in a band and you look like a total norm, that's like a thing. That's cool.
It's a good sign.
Yeah. It's like, because everybody else is trying their best to be a freak, right? And like, and plus you've got instant cred just being in a band that's actually, you know, touring and putting out records. Like,
yeah, I'm spending too much time, you know, on Google Maps figuring out where we're going and, you know, loading in. I don't have as much time to, you know, prep my looks, but.
That's actually something I was going to ask you later that, you know, since it came up now, I'd like to, like. You know, I've been on tour with a lot of women, and it is not significantly, but it's a different experience in a couple ways. And I wanted to ask, like, what's something a man just simply can't understand about touring as a woman?
Huh. I mean, that's a good question. And honestly, like, God, I haven't been on tour in a while, so the memories aren't really fresh. But I don't know, like, maybe just, well, I don't know if this is being a woman or if it's just being a human being, but like personal space is kind of just a thing that kind of goes out the window on tour. Oh, yeah. Even like, I don't know, just had lots of like creepy, like guys, like stagehands working venues, like touch the small of my back, stuff like that. It's like, like, oof, you know, just don't. Or like, I don't know, even not to be gross, and this is just a part of humanity in general, but you know, your time in the month doesn't magically disappear because you're on tour.
Sure.
That I have some memories of just like being slightly indisposed, like right before we went on or something. I was just like, oh God, like at least no one in the crowd knows what's going on. But, but I mean, that's the thing when you have supportive bandmates and you can just be honest about all of your, you know, daily lives and bodily functions and all that stuff, not to be gross. I mean, you know,
no, it's
you're,
real.
You're a team. So it's good stuff.
No, that's something everybody has to deal with.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that I'll, the thing I wonder, I feel bad sometimes when I've toured with women, cause I'm like, the only way to adapt to this is to kind of do like functionally, like what are normally like male things. Mm. Like just by being like fucking gross sometimes, you know, like I'm going to have to go 3 days without a shower.
Oh,
like 3 days without cleaning myself up right. You know what I mean? Like haven't brushed my hair in a couple and things like that. And, you know, I guess there's like a level of maintenance that just like, it's so tough to get sometimes, especially when you're doing kind of touring you all been doing.
Totally. I'm right there with you. Like I think that kind of transcends gender at a certain point because it's just part of being a road dog. Like, God, you just gotta take the hand you're dealt sometimes. So as far as showering goes, so it's a, that's a universal experience for sure.
Sure. My wife asked me this question this morning. I thought it was interesting. Was like, you know, we always talk about like varying forms of intelligence and like, you know, the fact that you don't necessarily have to be academically smart or educated to be in a touring band, but there are other aspects of intelligence like you would need to have. Like, what do you think are different skills or aspects of intelligence you need to be like a happy road dog?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I think, well, it kind of depends what your role is in the band, or like how much those things are shared. But
that's
like
true,
personally, I do a lot of driving and general navigational instincts are very important. Like, and even time management is like an important thing. Like how much time can we realistically spend at this rest stop? Like not going to like rush people while they're doing their thing, but you know, you kind of have to plan things ahead. And it's even just like the art of having an efficient, positive conversation at the merch table is so important because you never want people to feel like they're being rushed or not listened to, but you also need to like leave at a certain point. So
well, that's where there's like a social intelligence involved, right? Where not only with your, you know, your fans, but also like within the band and the people who
are
working for the band, you need to have that aspect, right?
Yeah. The emotional intelligence of kind of being able to pick up on someone's moods, like being able to kind of preempt the situation before someone is having like a meltdown or just like, you know, communicating is a huge, that's a skill that takes time to, you know, like get better at. So I think, that's some sort of like super sensory intelligence, just being able to read the room a little bit. But
well, yeah, I think you nailed the biggest part of it, which is, I think the best bands are the ones who know each other so well that you can preempt the things, you know?
Yes.
You're like, oh, this one's about to have a bad day. Like,
yep. And it, like, it has taken, it took, I feel confident that we've gotten there now where we like are at the level where we have those conversations immediately instead of letting it simmer. But like, it took years to kind of learn that lesson. Like, it's better to just be like, hey, are you okay? Like, immediately instead of just like not saying
that's
anything.
Right.
So,
and this is the first, you know, this is the first time you've had a very solidified lineup for like an extended period, right?
Yeah, totally.
So is that part of it? Just like, you know, you and Dave have obviously known each other quite a while, but is it like getting the others kind of ingratiated into the whole feeling of it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so.
Luckily enough, Marcus.
Oh, Dave,
Sean,
you're there.
Yes, I joined. What's up, y'all? I was going to say, luckily enough, Sean and Marcus were already road dogs at the beginning, too.
So you didn't have to do like road dog training at all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Marcus is a little bit, he's like a year older than us, and he's been playing in touring bands since he was like 18. Nice. And Sean is a little bit younger than us, but same thing. He's just been like doing it. And also he just like lives to tour. He like loves it. And so, and in general, they're just like the most, like agreeable, flexible people. Like we just got very lucky getting to play with them because, yeah, we've played with a lot of people over the years. I'm not saying the other people we played with weren't like that, but,
sure.
Yeah, we kind of stumbled into this really healthy dynamic and definitely don't take that for granted because we have had some crazy times on the road. But yeah, I was just making a zine a few weeks ago to like package with this new record we just put out. And
oh, nice. Cool.
I made a page for it called The Tale of 10 Drummers. because we've toured with 10 different drummers. And
wow. You're like Spinal yeah. Tap now.
I know. Yeah. they're just spontaneously combusting. Yeah. So yeah.
It was either that or trading cards.
Exactly. I made it look like little Pokemon cards with like their powers and stuff. It was fun.
This, you guys should maybe like a backdrop on stage should be like retired jerseys.
All that's the old drummers. Such a good idea. I yes. love that. We've thrown yeah. around ideas of like bringing all the drummers onto a very special like episode, like live stream episode or something. I don't know.
It's a Blue Man Group style rap voice.
Yeah, man.
Little Varsity Letters would be so fun.
Oh, yeah. 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 So wait, Dave, so where maybe some Notre Dame action, I guess, considering the history of the band?
Oh, maybe.
You just perhaps. Need to find like the shiny cloth material. That, yeah. Yeah, the high school gymnasium banner material. Who does yeah. that in Chicago? Let's see.
It's so crazy that they gave those jackets to kids like in the summer, you know? Yeah. Here's yeah, a bunch of wool and leather, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Dave, where are you? Are you good?
Yeah, I'm downstairs in front of my computer.
Nice.
And you're both in Greater Chicago, yeah? Or no, you, Julia, you said you're currently in Kentucky?
I am indeed.
So have you been holing up there during the pandemic or have you been in Chicago?
No, yeah, I've been in Chicago the whole time. I just came down here yesterday
oh, cool.
To spend a week with my grandpa now that we're both fully vaxxed.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Now, I didn't know until I heard your song Go Outside and saw the video that people in Chicago went to the beach and there's like there's like beach culture in Chicago on the lake.
This
actually happens.
Yeah.
Like, what's the deal there?
Yeah, well, we don't really, we're kind of posers in that regard. We're like, we don't live very close to the lake. We actually live quite far from the lake. So okay. It's almost more of like traveling out of town for us because we, it's like a trip, you know? But,
well, if you're like, if you live in Chicago and you want to go to the beach, if you're smart, then you'll just go to Indiana because they have clean beaches there.
Okay.
There's fewer people, but yeah, there's like the shoreline of Lake Michigan has like stretches of sandy beaches, all like basically the city kind of, you know, butts up to the lake. And so yeah. there are these beaches and they're all public and free and actually really nice. There's like some really nice sand volleyball areas and there's like a bird sanctuary.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty like it's beautiful. It's almost like a little microclimate too. It's pretty ideal, you know?
Yeah, the summers are so much different than any other season.
Right. It gets like painfully hot there too, as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of humid. but it's better than the alternative, you know, like polar vortex life. So,
right. So, I mean, you guys uniquely, I mean, I guess there's a bunch of bands who fell into this, but you had Printer's Devil came out on what, February 28th of 2020?
Yeah.
So, you know, when you were like leading up to that date, you know, were you feeling pretty confident that this, you know, the things we were hearing in like Italy and things like that, we're just gonna, okay, it won't be as bad here. We'll get our record out. Or at what point were you starting to feel a little murky about all of it?
Oh, yeah. Well,
I feel like it rushed up on us, kind of. I feel like when Tom Hanks got it, that's when the world started burning.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was a strange AB there, wasn't there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was March 11th. I'll never forget that night. That's the night the NBA shut down.
Rudy Gobert Day.
Yes, exactly. And that was so surreal. I remember we were dog sitting, Dave and I were, and we were at our friend's apartment watching their dogs. And we were just like, we were actually supposed to go to a show that night. And I ended up bailing. I gave some, you know, bullshit excuse, but it was really because I was freaking out. I was like, oh my God, this is like actually very dangerous. And it's happening here. But, to answer your question, like I remember we played a show at the University of Wisconsin the week before the record came out. And I was like, that gave me a lot of confidence. Like, you know, college shows usually kind of suck, but at least in our experience, but it was actually kind of a great show. Like, I don't know, 50 or 60 kids were there. And we were like, whoa, like this has never happened to us. Like you know, there are people here. This is great. And I was like, man, maybe this tour is like going to be great. Like maybe people are going to come to these shows. And we've never headlined. So we didn't really know what to expect, but that was like a very good sign. And then we played the two release shows the next weekend. It went great. Like, I think they both sold out, which was so awesome. And then the night after the second release show, it was Leap Day. Like that night.
Yeah.
We went out to a bar after to celebrate. And, I'll never forget, like, at the bar talking, like, oh, yeah, like, things are pretty bad in Italy, but, like, maybe, because we had a Europe tour planned in June, and we were like, maybe we'll just have to cancel the Italy shows, you know?
Right,
maybe we'll just play, you know, skirt around that region or whatever. And little did we know that, like, a week later, it would just all kind of fall apart. But, but we had hope. You know?
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's like, you know, no control over a worldwide pandemic, just like poor timing by the universe. But how quickly did you all start communicating about, you know, really wanting to keep like a head of steam? Cause it seems as if you never really got too down about it and just kind of initially started working on some other avenues to connect with your fans. Did you have, you know, Twitch and paywall content and stuff prior to the pandemic, or was this all a result of it?
Yeah.
I don't think we have ever edited a video before the pandemic. Okay. Like we jumped into it just felt like that was the only thing we could do at that point. Just looking at, you know, what our year could have been and how to fill it up to kind of, you know, make the year not be a complete wash.
Yeah.
Like we just kind of dove into trying all this different stuff. I was always super curious about Twitch because of, you know, just like streamers and like the kind of surging popularity that platform's gotten. Sure.
Dave, tell the people about the Twitch streamer that you always watched before.
Oh, I always watch this page called Salty Bets.
Okay,
it's like it's kind of like you bet fake money on kind of like Street Fighter style arcade fights, but it could be like it's all like custom made characters, so it could be like Brian Griffin from Family Guy versus like Missing
like Ronald
Mo
from McDonald.
Or Ronald McDonald. Yeah, it's check it out. I highly recommend it. But
that's fun.
Yeah, I don't know. Twitch always seemed to be like one of the websites where like people could really like showcase some unique art or like a unique kind of presentation. Sure. So that was what always drew me in about that.
Yeah. I just want to add, we did not have a Twitch or anything like that before COVID. And we kind of got lucky because some of our friends started using Twitch to like do their own little virtual concert series we got invited. Like, I don't know if I would have dived into Twitch. as quickly as we did without that kind of invitation.
Sure.
Because specifically our friend Ryan McKenna, who used to play in the band Prawn.
Uh-huh.
Still does. He made an app called Social Distance Party that used Twitch on the back end. And he asked us if we'd want to play a one-off show. And he kind of through that process taught me how to use like OBS and the various things you need to stream. And once he taught me that, he kind of gave me a crash course. I was like, oh, like we already have a green screen. Like I could just buy a cheap webcam on Amazon and we could do this like for free, you know, in our basement. So yeah, it all kind of came together really fast once Dave and I like figured out how to do it.
There's a little learning curve, but we got it.
Yeah.
I mean, were you already like songwriting wise, were you under, had you been writing from distance prior to that where, you know, you would send each other demos and people had the ability to record their own parts at home?
Well, we're really lucky because Dave and I and Sean, our bass player, we all live together. So we are like under one roof.
Big part. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we've been in this house for like 2.5 years now. And Marcus is the only one who's not living there, but he's married. And like, so they lived across town and they just recently bought a house in the burbs. But so it was actually pretty easy because we were able to just keep going, like didn't really miss a beat. And that's just where we were lucky. Like most bands don't have the luxury of seeing their bandmates all the time, every day. Yeah,
pretty awesome.
There's a point where we didn't get together for a while just because things were looking so bad. So it was really nice to finally, like, when was it, Jules, when we started practicing again, like all together in person?
End of May, I think.
Yeah, that was kind of like a rebirth moment, I feel like. It felt really good to, you know, just play live music, even if it's just four of you together.
Sure.
Yeah.
And what's songwriting like in that house? You know, if you're living together, I mean, is it super organic? Like, you know, you're drinking coffee and someone's like, check out this riff, or or are people like really independently working on their own songs? Like how does a Rapboys song come together in that house?
Yeah, it's kind of more linear than, I don't know how other bands do it, but it usually starts with like me playing guitar either by myself or just me and Dave jamming and just coming up with a few different ideas.
Julia usually comes to us with like the skeleton of everything. And it's always like, oh, these lyrics are so bad. I'm like, Julia, you have like 90% of the lyrics right here.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty critical of myself, but yeah.
It's like a very fleshed out skeleton that you bring to us though.
But I bring it to you, Dave, I bring it to you first, and if you like it, then that's my green light to keep working on it. Because like Dave's taste and judgment is like highly respected. Like that is like my that's my barometer.
You're giving me a lot of credit here.
It's your phone a friend.
Yeah, Dave is totally like my lifeline. Like he's like my kind of reassurance, like, oh yeah, I like this. Or like maybe let's try this instead, or you know, whatever. So once I flesh it out, show it to Dave, work on it more, then I'll bring it to Sean and Marcus, hopefully with like a voice memo to reference. And then we start working on all the parts.
Have you two, you know, been at it, you know, so long, specifically with each other? Is there like a shorthand at this point in that writing process? Like, Can you just read like a look from Dave to be like, oh, okay, he doesn't like this part?
Yeah.
I could definitely read a look from Julia during practice. Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
I'm pretty notorious for like not having like a good poker face in those moments.
I feel you.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's, yeah, there's like a subtle understanding between us, but
sure.
I think it's just important that we keep striving for, you know, new ideas and try to stay conscious of like kind of ripping off old Rat Boys material.
right. Not yeah. just like rehashing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Trying to stay fresh.
And what's your, Julia, what's your discipline like to sit down and writing? Are you a creation rushes you type, or are you a grinder who kind of makes sure that you sit down and work every day?
I'm kind of like
a bit of both, I guess.
I was going to say some like a third thing, like definitely not like creation. I guess I'm never rushing to finish a song. Like usually I'll come up with an idea and then like record a little bit of it on my phone and then let it sit for like months or sometimes even years.
Okay.
And then like return to it and either naturally just playing again or going back through my voice memos. I like force myself to do that like twice a year, like go through my voice memos and pick out, like make a list of a few to work on.
Yeah, it's like pretty common just living in this house all together to kind of hear the same riffs pop up, like, you know, 1 week a little bit differently the next week. Mm. And every time you're like playing through those riffs, you kind of have to decide the best thing for it. But yeah, it definitely like kind of goes through a slow transformation.
Slow build. Yeah. Slow journey of just, I don't know, kind of hearing a part differently. But I'd say 80% of the time, that's how it goes. And then 20% is me just like being able to write a song extremely quickly and being so stoked and surprised. Like, oh God, right. this happened really fast. So that doesn't happen as often, but it does happen sometimes. Like at the beginning of the pandemic, actually, it happened a few times and I was like, whoa, this is dope.
Oh, where something came faster than normal?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You think that's a result of just like, you know, some years in the game now, you know, where to kind of trust your instincts and where you're going more? Or did you just fall into it?
Maybe. I honestly still, whenever that happens, I just feel like I got lucky or like some like gift from the sky fell into my lap. But yeah, that's a nice way to think of it though. Cause yeah, I think I've gotten a little bit better at not dragging my feet as much. And like, kind of, if an idea feels really good, just keep playing it like over and over, even if it feels a little bit tedious, like it's usually extremely worth it. So
I find that one of the most valuable things in songwriting is just like listening to old songs and determining what you don't like.
Yes.
You know, and then when you're writing, it's kind of just like, oh, there's one of those. Let's not do that.
Yep. That's how I really feel strongly about lyrics with that too. Because sometimes I listen back to these songs, I'm like, why are there so many fucking lyrics? Like, God, too many words. Like, just stop, like edit, you know? So my goal now.
I heard something you were attempting to be like more concise in your messaging. How's that process going?
Definitely trying. It's tough too, because sometimes you have a very clear like image, like mental image or situation or message that you want to like get across, but less is usually more, you know.
Yeah. A lot of these songs and Julia's lyrics are just like stories, so they can get really literary.
Right.
And you know, you need the words like that sometimes. But I always think about, I think Greg from Deerhoof said this, when they're writing and writing lyrics, especially, they're always like considering the audience and, you know, considering that they love to tour the world. And that means like playing to people who don't understand English.
Right.
And like, you know, being clear and to the point with easy to understand words is, I think, really important in our songwriting.
Huh, that's interesting.
But I mean, at the same time, I like just singing like nonsense. So it's kind of nice to do. It's kind of nice to do both, you know, like, I don't know.
You know, in Ireland, they sing the guitar solos.
Right. Dude, I mean, there's
only so much you could pander to like a central Austrian audience, you know, or something.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I don't care at all.
Yeah, you like, can sing some really simple stuff and they're still not with you, you know?
Right. Yeah, like I appreciate what Greg is saying for sure. But at the same time, that's never really entered into my mind when writing lyrics. It's more so just like, can someone hear this song once and like have any idea what's going on? And my goal is a little bit, you know, like I at least want there to be some lyric that like sticks out, or just being like overwhelmed by just like quantity of lyrics is something that kind of bugs me when I listen back to some of our earliest songs. I'm like, oh God, like just too many words, but
quiet down, Julia. Yeah. Like you're talking to yourself, like,
like play, you can play as loud as you want, but just maybe less words would be fine.
I heard you saying that you're attempting to write platonic love songs. Like, what is that? And how's it going?
Oh, man. I mean,
there's that one song that's like, you're my best friend.
Yeah.
It's
well,
like that.
Yeah, dude. It's funny, actually, because for Valentine's Day, we wanted to do a cover every month on our Patreon, and we wanted to do a song that was a love song, but like you said, not necessarily romantic love. Like it could be anything. And the one I really wanted to do was You're My Best Friend by Queen.
Oh, beautiful.
Such a good song. We didn't end up doing that because I feel intimidated. I would never want to like, I don't know if I'd feel like.
Oh, to like sing Freddie?
Yeah, fuck that. Like, I don't know.
That's scary.
So, no.
If there's anyone, that's fucking scary. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like he is the goat. For real. So yeah,
maybe today I'm not feeling very operatic, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, truly. So we ended up doing I Wanna Hold Your Hand by the Beatles, which is a great song.
Yeah, it's still great.
And similarly kind of like wholesome. Like it's just very I don't know. I don't know. I feel like there aren't enough songs that kind of celebrate friendship and like the love that you have for your family is so important. And I feel like, and even like love for your pets, things like that. You don't have to specify who you're, you know, talking about or singing to, but just leaving it a little bit open kind of allows for, you know, it doesn't have to be like you're so in love with something or someone. It's more that you just, you know, you love something so deeply. It can be, I think, beyond the scope of traditional romantic love. So.
Yeah.
It is something
really cool.
I think about a lot.
It makes me think of that one with that most popular Get Up Kids song, Oh Amy, Don't Hate Me. Everyone thought there was just a woman named Amy out there that he was, and it turned out to be their tour van, you know?
Oh yeah. That's and was, great. And like Pup has a song that's like about Stefan's pet chameleon.
His pet, right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. You would never know. It sounds like a drug addict girlfriend or something.
Right.
But no, it's about his dying chameleon. It's so pure. But
I like that. I like that in music. I mean, there's so many, it's almost like, and I've seen people do it. I've seen people like sabotage their own relationships to even have something to write about. So the idea that you can like connect to a real deep love and a deep empathy, like through something else, I think that's cool. And it's probably good for artists.
Yeah, it's nice because that stuff doesn't like go away, you know. That stuff like lasts if you're lucky for your whole life. And so, for instance, even like for, you know, we have like this batch of new songs that we're working on for the next record, and like one of those songs, my goal was like I want to write like the most posy, like happy love song ever. But like it doesn't have to be like for your boyfriend or your partner or whoever.
Right.
It could be for anyone, but because like. You know, like Dave and I we've been together for, you know, so long at this point. Those are kind of the aspects of a relationship that I find myself wanting to celebrate the most. It's just the like friendship and the stability and dependability and like that, I don't know, just growing together it's fun to be able to sing about those things. And if you're lucky, like I said, it just keeps going. So yeah, I don't know.
There are many shades of love.
So true.
You got to say that in a much deeper voice, like preferably like shades Barry White-ish. Yeah, there it is. There it is. That's what yeah. I needed.
So, ooh, yeah.
I was reading, I don't want to rub the salt in the wound about the fact that you released a record right before a pandemic again. So,
oh, it's okay.
I promise you that this question will lead somewhere. I saw that you had some shows booked with Wilco, who's one of your idols. I'm sure they'll happen again. Yeah, I'm sure you're on the very short list of bands Wilco wants to play with. So I trust this will happen for you. But I had a larger question about it because I often think of Wilco as sort of like the model for a successful band, you know, in the way that they have so little mainstream radio success and mainstream like streaming success, but Wilco can go fill up, you know, arenas and play these major venues and keep their fan base really tightly intact. Is that part of your attraction to that band? And what do you think like their trick is?
Man. Well, they are probably my favorite band. When we got invited to do those shows, I could feel like my blood pressure go up like in the moment. I was like, oh my God,
that's awesome.
It's so cool. And it was actually, those shows were going to be really unique because, they were in like big venues and they wanted Dave and I to play as a two piece. So it was going to be like really stripped down and kind of us playing very quietly to a lot of people.
Yeah,
and
we
haven't really ever had that opportunity. So, but like I said, like you said, hopefully it'll happen someday. Mm. But yeah, I mean, it's funny you mentioned that they kind of are a model, like definitely role models for us because just even the way they structure their business, which isn't what you want to think about really when you talk about music, but they make a living and they own their own studio and have this cache of gear. And like it seems like obviously Jeff is like the band leader, but everyone seems very able to express themselves and like everyone kind of has a voice within the group and everyone just seems very content to work with one another and their working relationships and the way that they've been so sustainable they've one more thing I'll say is they toured like and still do tour, but they like toured for so long. They kind of built a fan base where they would go back to Des Moines and like see, you know, Rodney in the crowd and you know, like kind of see familiar faces at each show. And that's 100% the way that we try to like grow our band. So
yeah, it's like, it's easy to see kind of what we want our band to become in Wilco.
Right.
It just seems like an empire that they founded, like a small empire that they founded very organically. They made it like a bunch of mistakes. You could tell from like the whole band lore.
Right.
But they figured it out. The business side and the music is super inspirational.
Yeah, he's cool. And you're right. I mean, there's like this operational thing to Wilco that feels almost, I guess for me, coming out of like the punk rock scene, I just appreciate bands who do things the way they do it. It's not that they've totally avoided, you know, labels and some side of the corporate thing. You can't totally avoid that. But I really appreciate a band who goes out of their way to connect with their fans, even when they get bigger, own their own stuff, be able to monetize, you know, touring smartly and correctly. Like there's sort of a cool punk rock element, I think, to what they're doing.
Yeah, they know how to, you know, stay true to themselves. And also Nels Klein, shout out. I love Nels Klein.
Little Wilco appreciation. So this is a good time just to break it up. I like to do a section of the show called Mystery Friend.
Who did you piss on? Who did you offend? Were you late to the king? Did you show up at the end? Put on your thinking caps. It's your mystery friend.
And the point of the game is that I'm going to prompt you on a story, something fun that happened, and you need to tell me the story, the details, and guess which one of your mystery friends told me.
Love it.
Now, I heard about a night you had, I believe in Buffalo, and I've heard about a marathon bowling session with many pitchers of Molson Canadian.
Oh, yeah, man.
and apparently it got pretty hot and crazy. Can you tell me about this evening?
Yeah, man. We went bowling with Pup and Casper Skulls in Buffalo on an off day. And
bowling in Buffalo.
Bowling in Buffalo. What magic. I got to be honest, though, and this is like my biggest like Grinch, you know, feature. I just hate bowling. Like, I hate it. And
you didn't bowl.
I did, but I hated every minute of it. Just joking. No, I love being around other people bowling. And I like drinking the beer. I like the sound. But just lifting that heavy ball over and over isn't my favorite. But that was a great night. We got pretty toasty. It was really fun. And Pup's merch manager, Steph, who is like an angel. She's my favorite person. She got exceptionally toasty that night and was just yelling the most insane profanities all over the place.
It was a true Philly.
Yeah, Philly moment, yeah. For sure.
Right, right. You get a Philadelphian drunk in Buffalo, you never know what's going to happen.
So true.
So who ended up kind of... Wait, Julie, are you the person who's like on the bowling team and people are actually being competitive and you just kind of like phone it in and like toss the ball like gingerly down and don't care?
No, I mean like I try, right?
Okay.
That's how you get the surprise strikes though.
That is true.
Yeah, that is kind of my MO. I either throw a gutter ball or a strike. There's like no in between. And I'm trying every time to get a strike, but sure. I'm not very good. So I think that's part of the reason I don't like bowling is I just suck. So
there's no middle class in your bowling game.
None. So
do you remember who proved victorious?
Well, Dave, you can speak to this too. It was a big battle between Steve from Pup, their guitar player, and Sean, our bass player. They're both very good. And so
yes, I think those are the two most competitive people on that tour package.
True.
And do you remember who reigned supreme?
I think Steve won. I'm pretty sure. But everyone was rooting against him. It was kind of funny. Everyone was like booing
Steve
him.
Sucks.
Yeah. It was
he just coming in too hot, like too hot and competitive? People are like, all right, bring this guy down.
He is so competitive. And he kind of took it seriously and everyone was just enjoying like making him squirm. So even his bandmates were just like booing him and shit. It was so funny. But yeah, I think he won. I think he overcame the haters and won.
Wow. He's like, he really is like Kyle Lowry. He's a full on.
So
that's
true.
Really funny.
So true.
So speaking of which, can you take a stab at which mystery friend told me this?
I feel like it had to be Dan Case. No.
It's close. Close. You're in the right camp.
Ah, shit. Was it?
Is it Steph?
Julian? Bruce.
It was that. I'll just lay it because it's really funny that you told me who the semi-protagonist of this story was because he's
Steph?
The one who told me.
Oh,
it was Steve.
Steve. Amazing. Yeah,
it was Steve Sutkowski himself.
Love
and
it.
Now it makes a lot more sense why this was such a flashbulb memory for him because clearly he was really in the moment here.
Of course he was telling you about the night that he won bowling.
Right? Yeah.
Never forgets a win.
Of course.
Oh, let me just choose the story of when I defeated three other bands on tour. Of course.
Amazing. What a night.
All right. So you all, shout out to Steve for giving me that story and being a fine gentleman in general. So you're both Notre Dame alumnus, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So your just general thoughts quickly on the film Rudy.
Ooh.
Are we fans?
Have you seen that?
We're not fans.
Yeah, I have. It's just like so feel good. You gotta be in like a certain mood to watch it.
Oh, do you need a little more sardonic to your story? You need, like, did
I'm
you need Rudy to like lose
grit.
A leg or like I mean, his best friend. His best friend died at the right at the beginning. You know.
Yeah.
You know, if it was in black and white, maybe I would watch it.
Just a touch more noir.
Julia has a closer connection to Rudy for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just a sucker for that stuff. I love.
Oh, me too.
I love a cheese ball movie. I love the music from that movie. The dum 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 dum. Whatever. Yeah. Oh my god! Like that gives me goosebumps.
I get so pumped up when I hear it.
Yeah, man. I put on the Rudy soundtrack sometimes, just like to do the dishes or something. Just like to force myself to get out of bed. Yeah, it's. I love that movie. I don't know. I'll always love it. I know it's cheesy, and Notre Dame has a lot of problems, and I can't forgive some of their weirdness, but at the end of the day, good movie.
I found myself, so apparently, you know, Rudy Rudiger is still around.
He's an asshole. I've heard he's an asshole.
He's funky. He's definitely funky, and I've heard some interviews with him. Let's just say he is unabashedly Rudy Rudiger for like his whole life. Like that's what he's selling. That's what he's pimping. Like that's his thing.
Respect.
But I heard an interview with Joe Montana, who I guess was a freshman on Notre Dame when Rudy had his big moment, you know, when Charles S. Dutton, you know, gives him a little love and he gets carried off the field. And apparently I listened to an interview of Joe Montana besmirching Rudy, saying that he was, you know, barely a member of the team. I barely knew this was happening. And there's kind of this strange 50-50 on like the people he played with. Some people are all in and all about this guy. And some people are like, yeah, fuck that guy. Like, don't care at all. But I personally found myself kind of like hating Joe Montana afterwards. Huh. I'm like, you know what, motherfucker? You're the golden boy. Like, you've had everything in your life. You know, you were like this blonde, good-looking quarterback for like 20 years. You have Super Bowls. Why are you shitting on this guy who had like one great day in his life, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of felt cheap.
It's just unnecessary. It's like, let the man have his moment. It's his whole life.
Exactly.
You got your Super Bowls, you know, you're fine. You're fine.
Let Rudy, you know?
Exactly.
You got to do that. Yeah.
I agree.
Good. Thank you. So why does like every Irish person in America sweat Notre Dame's jock so hard? Like, what's the story?
Oh man. Well, that's a great question. I feel like a lot of that shit happened before I was born and before Dave and I were born. I don't know like exactly where the myth making happened. Like
back when the uniforms looked different.
Yeah. When people were still wearing like the leather helmets and shit.
The floppy leather helmets.
Yeah, man. So much of it has to do with football, honestly. And like, still to this
football
day.
Football and church.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
It could bring everybody together, football and church.
Dude.
Right.
Totally. I mean, I used to, when I was a student, I sang in the choir that sang right after the football games. So like,
oh, really?
All of the people would come for it straight from the stadium to the Basilica and like, mass would happen 30 minutes after. Anyway. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Really? So it's like, it literally is tied in with like football being like a semi religious experience, like this weekly religious experience almost, huh?
Totally. It felt like a ritual almost. But
that's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it was totally a thing in my family. My dad went there and a lot of his siblings went there. And like, it was just kind of, I was raised in the, you know, cult of Notre Dame, but yeah, it's
no wonder you love Rudy.
I do, exactly. Like I am all in. But yeah, it's this mysterious, like has this mysterious kind of mystique like pull on people to this day. Like even last year, God, Notre Dame danced with the devil last year and it was bad. Right. And it's really embarrassing, but I don't know. They're still got that pull on people, I guess.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Yeah. Well, coming full circle, so now that we've had some fun. So, you know, you're raised in this Notre Dame household in Kentucky. And, you know, I was wondering, like, if you had run into, you know, growing up there, you know, when you start getting into music and maybe some, you know, alternative, you know, cultural sort of stuff. What was it like in your household? And did you ever have any clash with like Bible Belt values like inside your home or in like the area you grew up in?
Yeah, not really, thankfully.
Cool.
Yeah. My parents are both from Ohio. My whole family is very much more Midwestern than Southern. So I definitely wasn't raised with any sort of like religious fervor or anything. It was very, my parents were both very like appreciative of the arts. My dad collects like art. He collects paintings and such. And
oh, cool.
My mom was a theater major in college and like kind of an amateur opera singer before she entered the business world. Wow. So crazy. Yeah. So like they were both always just very encouraging of whatever we wanted to do. Like, luckily, yeah, very like open-minded. And so, yeah, luckily I never really rubbed against that kind of like just skepticism or like suspicion of, you know, like leftist artistic values, right, which is totally what right. I was into. So, but at the same time, like I wasn't really exposed to like real alternative culture until I met Dave, really, like until I left. I just was kind of in my own little space, in my own world, just, you know, listening to Sufjan Stevens and writing in my bathroom. So,
right.
You know, I was pretty on my own.
So that really was like a pretty climactic time for you. I mean, it sounds like, you know, you showed up to college, you know, being a musician already, but you hadn't really been too into electric guitar yet. You know, yeah. Not too into like the subversive, like, so that must have been a really like impactful time in your life where, you know, it went down a different avenue. Like, what did you go to school imagining you were going to do, like when you showed up?
Yeah, I don't know what, I would be curious to hear Dave's answer too, but like I showed up at school planning, hoping to become a sports journalist. That was my goal. Nice. Like Al Michaels, that was like always my goal, just like be in the booth,
perfect. Yeah.
Calling a game. But yeah. I didn't know how to get there. I was just excited to, you know, major in English and maybe figure out how to write for the magazine or whatever. So,
right.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't like trying to start a band or like scoping out who to play with. But at the same time, like Dave and I had met on the internet the summer before. Cause I noticed in his profile picture, he was playing bass and I was like, oh, like that's pretty sick. And, in my profile picture, I was playing guitar. So he reached there out to go. Me. Yeah. Dave was like, hey, we should jam when we get to school. I was like, okay. I mean, I've never jammed, but I guess I'll say, okay. And so, yeah, but yeah, so we ended up meeting up right away during freshman orientation and that kind of changed my whole plan. Cause I was, all of a sudden I was like, oh fuck, like I have a friend who I can play music with whenever I want. Like this is
right.
This is what I want to do. So it kind of happened really fast and I was so stoked, you know.
That's awesome. Yeah, how about you, Dave?
Yeah, well I went for architecture.
Oh wow.
But it was a lot of a grind. I mean, I didn't know what to expect either, but yeah, like Julia said, I was kind of the one scoping out to find people to play with.
Right,
I was
right.
like the guy who came to college with a electric guitar and an amp. And it was actually really surprising that I was actually one of the only people like who was looking to play music together.
Oh, yeah. Did you imagine like, oh, I'm going to college. There's going to be like tons of people with guitars and drums.
Yeah,
and
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, huh.
And then, oh no, people are focused on school and classes. No, I mean...
Nerds, no.
Julie and I commiserated over that a lot, so...
Right. But you both ended up finishing school?
Yes.
Yeah, yes.
So,
and, yeah.
Towards the end, we kind of made the decision that we're like, yeah, we should pursue this. Like, we don't have forever, you know?
Sure. So, I mean, I know, you know, you went to Chicago afterwards, but I can't imagine you were, you know, doing the Rap Boys full time yet. What were you all doing for work and stuff when you got out there? Like, were you staying in the professions you studied in school or were you just kind of making ends meet?
Oh, man.
Making ends meet
making
for sure.
Making ends meet for sure. I, yeah. Well, okay, I'll just do this. I did like school. Like, I studied English and I really enjoyed like my classes and stuff. But yeah, I like left and I interviewed at this PR firm downtown in Chicago and like got this job. I was like an intern, but it was the first job I interviewed for and I got it. And I was like, oh, well, I guess like I should just do this, I guess. So, but I hated that job, man. But I will say, so I would do that. And the client that I worked for, the team I was on, was Degree Men Deodorant.
Oh, and, okay.
At that time, they had Steph Curry as their spokesperson.
And remember that, yeah.
So this is like his first MVP season, like the first Warriors championship. It was awesome. And my job was to cover him like a hawk. Like every day I had to write up like a report of like what he's doing. Basically just like a press report for him to so the Degree knew what he was up to. And it was a great time to be covering him because he was all over the place. And so I followed his season intensely and really enjoyed that. But still, I was getting paid, like the rest of that job was so just not my thing. Like a lot of office politics and like just kind of faking enthusiasm for things that I just didn't care about, no offense. So I would kind of be booking tours for us on company time. And eventually I like asked for some time off and they're like, well, you're an intern. We can't give you time off. And I was like, oh, well, okay. I'm just not going to come back after Christmas.
I'm no longer an intern then.
Yeah. but one other thing that I got to tell you, Benny, is that Dave and I both did Instacart for a long ass time. Okay. Yeah. So that was the big grocery grind every day. And
that's cool. That's what Jeff Rosenstock and wife were doing that too. To help get by at some point.
Oh my God. If Jeff showed up with my groceries.
Or maybe it was just Christine. I don't know if Jeff did it. But Christine definitely was.
Well, I'm imagining Jeff and Christine doing it and just showing up with my groceries and that would make my day. God.
Jeff would definitely come with a guitar, just yelling, here's your order. Just like rock it so hard. Did you unearth any like following Steph Curry so closely? I mean, I kind of view him on the outside as like really great guy, but one of the most like vanilla motherfuckers in the world. Like, is there anything controversial about Steph Curry?
Not that I could find.
I think he's
that
clean,
was. He seems pretty clean to me. That was like from my research. That was right when the Drake lyric was happening, I think. The Chef Curry with the pot, Chef Curry with the shot, whatever. That was like the big news. But no, he seems pretty squeaky clean. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was him and Jimmy Graham was the other guy at the time. Okay. And
on the Saints, right?
At the time, correct, Dave. And he was also pretty squeaky clean. He was a pilot. I think they got to choose the squeaky clean guys for Degree.
Right.
You know?
For the PR. Oh, right. For Degree.
Degrees covering their asses.
Yeah.
What about you, Dave? Did you get into anything funny? Went straight out, like, besides for the Instacart stuff?
Well, there was, like, Instacart. That was the main thing, and we were lucky enough to like work that job while it was actually profitable for independent contractors.
Sure.
They started, you know, messing with wages and tips and everything. Lots of big stuff. I was going to say though, like one of my regrets is like we didn't really start touring until you're 21, 22, like out of college.
Mm.
And, started realizing once we met more bands and future friends on the road that people have been doing this since they were 18. So I feel like we were playing catch up as far as tour goes.
Yeah,
sure.
But like really wanting to do it and really hitting it hard. That was 2015, 2016 was a lot of touring and grinding, but also like meeting probably some of the most influential people in our lives now.
Sure. Set you on the course you're on.
Yeah.
Yes.
We left for tour the day after Dave graduated college in 2015.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy. Yeah.
What was that tour? What was the first one out of college?
Oh, God. It was the poster was a Guy Fieri rat. We called it Out of Bounds Tour. It was just like East Coast and Southeast, I think. We were just booking shows with houses, like people we knew, you know.
Sure, sure.
Did we go to New Orleans on that one?
Yes, and that's the time that we found a pothole that was so large and so deep that all four of us got in it and posed.
Oh, really?
Picture. Yeah.
New Orleans is one of the hardest places in the country to do DIY shows.
It is
always insane for whatever
it was
reason.
A bad show, dude. We showed up at like we showed up at 8 p.m. and they were like, oh, come back in an hour to load in. And I was like, what? Yeah, like shit, man.
But New Orleans is uniquely one of those towns I love going to, but don't like playing, you know, like I want to go to New Orleans, but I've never had a good show there, I don't think.
Yeah, it's very tough. But
got to show up with vignettes. Well, speaking of food, so you live, you know, obviously in hotly contested ground. What are your general thoughts on Chicago pizza versus the rest of the world's pizza?
I think it's valid.
What?
Valid and tasty.
Valid as king?
Valid as in it is a pizza. I love Chicago pizza, though. Even if you eat it with a fork, you know, and sauce, bread, toppings.
Delicious. Yeah.
I think it's delicious, but I mean, once a year for me.
Okay, so it's special occasion for you.
Yeah.
But that's the deep dish. Like,
that's a deep dish. Right. Yeah, we have so many favorite, like, regular pizza places around here, too.
There are different types of pizza in Chicago, which I don't think is talked about enough.
Well, it's not. I mean, the same way I could go to like Pizzeria Uno in New York City and get some version of a deep dish. I'm sure you can get some thin crust too, but it's your specialty pie. What's your, if you're going to get, now I've heard this contested and I've been led astray by so many people who work in venues. what is, like, if I'm going to come to town and I'm going to get the, you know, the Chicago slice of pizza, like this is what Chicago pizza is supposed to taste like. Where are you going to send me?
Probably, there's a place called Art of Pizza that is, pretty close to where we recorded, our record GN. That studio is no longer there, but Art of Pizza is still there. And it's awesome because you can get a slice of deep dish there. So you don't have to.
Yeah, they're one of the only people doing that.
Yeah. You don't have to commit. And just as an aside, I would say whether you want deep dish or whether you want like a Chicago like a tavern style pizza, which is what we eat more often, like squares, like party squares,
the square cut, party cut.
Right. You gotta put jardinera on your pizza. That's something you can get nowhere else.
Wait, what's that mean?
Okay, so
it's like a hot pepper pickled condiment. Vegetable Ooh. Condiment.
Yeah, you put it on like an Italian beef sandwich. It's like like hot pickled vegetables, spicy. Ooh. And but you can put it on pizza here, and it is fucking awesome.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, dude. We'll show you. We'll show you the way.
I thought those little squares were Detroit style now.
It is.
Oh,
close.
That's like the. That's Detroit style is like the whole pizza is a square, though.
Right.
Yeah.
But, this is just a square slice out of a...
Yes.
I see.
And it's like cracker.
Now we're speaking the same language. Now we're talking.
Huh. It's like a cracker crust.
Oh, I'm hungry.
Yeah, dude. That's good shit. Great. Yeah.
So, all right. So all this aside, you put out a Happy Birthday Rap Boy. A collection of mostly old songs and one new songs, right? You know, I was wondering as you were going into this, like when you're reapproaching 10-year-old songs that you've already recorded before, like what was revealing to you about, you know, those songs and did you make any like major changes along the way or did you like keep them in their pure form?
Yeah. Yeah, mostly no major changes, I would say. Like a few of the songs we've played live consistently ever since we put them out like first put them out 10 years ago. So those
just
we had
stayed part of the set.
Yeah. So like for those, we had like a live arrangement to build on, which was really easy actually, because we just went into the studio and played it how we did at a show. But for the rest of them, yeah, it was like, it was mainly a process of adding stuff because like the original recordings were so kind of like sparse just because we didn't like, we didn't have as many like maybe like ideas, or more so just like didn't really have the resources or like gear to like we didn't have a Rhodes, like we didn't have like a Rhodes piano back in the day. So like now we could add that to a song and like, yeah, just kind of tightening everything up and playing it like as a band for the first time was the exciting part of this for me. I don't know. What do you think, Dave?
Well, yeah, just going into it, I was kind of surprised how easily everything came together. Like one of the big questions we had going into it was like, can we kind of capture that, you know, haphazard spirit of the first recording, you know, the kind of thing where you could hear the space bar being clicked in the background.
right. Sure.
But honestly, yeah, we went in and I think we kind of got the same kind of like delicacy, and it was really kind of effortless to play those songs. I think Julia, like, you know, maybe you didn't realize it when you were writing them, but you wrote songs that hold up and were actually really easy to layer onto rock songs, you know?
That's nice of you to say, Dave.
It's sweet. So it's more of a matter like kind of thickening it up rather than making changes.
I think so.
Speaking of that, I noticed on the song Collected that we kind of walked right into like a really, really great stoner metal part kind of I wasn't expecting to walk into.
Man.
Can I expect a little more of that like moving forward?
God, I hope so. Yeah. We probably gotta get into that for sure.
We are always influenced by Yes, the band Yes.
Oh, fuck yeah, sure.
We always had the Yes album in Julia's car, like pretty much permanently. It lived in the CD changer.
Wow.
And you know, that record, everything is just kind of built into like, oh, part one, part two, part three, part four. Right. Like one song has four parts. So we're like, yeah, we gotta do the Yes thing where we're just gonna throw in another part out of left field.
Dude, and the harmonies, that's like the main thing with Yes that I love so much, is like balls to the wall harmonies, like full volume. It sounds like a choir, but it's just like the same guy recording over himself a bunch, you know. It's like,
yeah,
I love how that sounds. And back when we first recorded Collected, like we recorded it for a school project of like class I was in, and I was inspired by Yes and I wanted it to sound like Yes, and it sounded pretty good, but I like always wanted to re-record that song and like make it even fucking heavier and like that part, make it even more ridiculous. And that was like one of my bucket list items. So I'm so happy we got to do it. I'm happy with how it sounds. It's like pretty, like I recorded like 12 vocal tracks or something. I don't know. It was awesome.
I love that. I mean, the combination of, it's not what I expected for you guys to reference Yes. So I'm happy to hear, like, because automatically the mix of your sound and what I know of Yes, that sounds very tasty to me. I think that could be great.
Hell yeah.
Also, to answer your question, I'm just looking over at all my fuzz pedals on the counter. So there will be more parts like that.
So you got a little, like, is that something newer for you? Like digging into fuzz and kind of getting a bigger sound like that?
I wouldn't say new. Well, for me, not really. Because I kind of listened to a bunch of hardcore music and just a lot of different stuff growing up. For Julia, for sure, she just got a new chorus pedal.
Yeah.
But
I didn't know what guitar pedals were until like until like a year into touring. I'm definitely still kind of just learning how truly loud and insane I can sound. But I love being on that path. I'm fully on the path at this point, so it's fun.
Oh, I love it. I want to see like 10 years from now, I'd love to see the Rat Boys just going in a a straight like ISIS pelican kind of direction.
Oh, yeah.
Let's just get gloomy. Come on.
I love the idea of like putting out records and people are just like, oh, fuck, this does not sound like them, but I guess this is what they're giving us this time. So
listen,
you know.
Pitchfork likes you all. So you, what you need to do with that is test them.
Yes.
Know? You have
push
to test
the limit.
Those people. Yeah. You can't keep them comfortable, you know?
Yes.
Got to make those people uncomfortable.
Just embrace the chaos, you know?
Yeah. Because you know how it is with the, if they like you now and you even sound remotely the same the next record, you're going into the fives. You know, just cause, you know, so, but if you take a bold direction into stoner metal, someone will go, oh, this is so innovative. You know, like it'll be, it'll be good.
I love that plan.
I remember I'm running into, Russian circles at the Canadian border once. So maybe we could collab on a record.
I mean, I think we were all just miserable and I don't think they knew who. I don't think they would remember that at all, but that was awesome to see a band at the border and be like, what up? Like, this sucks.
hard place to run into a band and have like a cool conversation.
Yeah, truly.
I always feel so strange at the border. Like, I know like there's no sign or anything like no talking, you know? But like anytime I'm in there, I always feel like just so uncomfortable. Like talking to my bandmates or like making a joke or something. I'm like, I'm being watched and judged. And like the more comically I take this process, like the longer they're going to keep me here, you know?
Yeah.
You get that feeling when you're there?
Totally.
Yeah. Lots even with suspicion. Small talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't want to arouse any suspicion.
That's right. Then they'll
say, but in a normal situation, staying still and perfectly quiet might arouse suspicion.
I always have this weird instinct, and I've gotten in trouble from my bands before because I've had a lot of run-ins with cops over the years. So at this point, my instinct is like, if you act really normal, you're less suspicious, you know? Like, if you just kind of act like super normal and casual, like, you've been there, you got nothing to worry about. But other people, that seems to make other people I'm with really uncomfortable. So I've had to pull that back, you know?
Yeah.
That's the emotional intelligence we were talking about.
That's right. That's right. You got, if you went too far, your band might not even make it out of the border.
so got to do what you got to do to cross country lines.
That's right. So, Julia, you know, you studied journalism. Are you a big reader?
Not as much as I used to be. I should be, you know. I tend these days to read like a lot of Wikipedia articles and like long form digital journalism, but haven't read a novel in a while, so should.
I think that is the new novel. Do you have a favorite contemporary author or like a favorite all-time author that you kind of go to?
Well, recently, the most recent contemporary author that I read who I really do enjoy, but it, I don't remember when we were talking about this in the conversation, but definitely kind of need to be in the mood for it, is Miriam Taves. She's Canadian, actually. And she comes from like a Methodist, like conservative culture in Winnipeg, or just outside of, I think. But anyways, she writes these just like beautiful, soul-crushing, you know, fiction novels about kind of that culture and like breaking out of it. And my sister turned me onto it, and it's really, really like emo. Like it's like the most emo fiction I've read, but it is very beautiful, you know?
Awesome. And what about like a classic author?
Ooh.
I heard you tell a funny story about Walt Whitman.
Oh God. Yeah, man. What a crazy life that man had.
That's great. Can you actually, I know this is, listen, we're going off track.
I'm happy.
It's the name of the podcast, but I heard you tell a really insane story about like Walt Whitman and a death mask.
Yeah, dude.
And can you give me like the quick synopsis on that insane tale?
Yes, I will try to make it quick. So Walt Whitman was like 13 or whatever, living in Brooklyn, and he was interning, apprenticing essentially at a print shop. And back then they would call the printer's apprentice a printer's devil, which is where the name of the record came from.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Cool.
So the guy he was working for, his boss, was like very eccentric. And this guy, Walt Whitman's boss, was obsessed with a radical Quaker theologian named Elias Hicks, who had already died, but a lot of his teachings and quotes and such lived on. And so this Walt Whitman's boss, I don't know that guy's name, was so obsessed with Elias Hicks and his teachings that he recruited Walt Whitman and maybe another apprentice to sneak into the cemetery at night, dig up this guy's grave, and hopefully make a death mask of his face, basically like put some plaster on this dude's corpse just so that he could have like, you know, a physical like memento of this man that he was so obsessed with. And they got caught. And I believe the print shop was forced to close. It was like a big scandal. But Walt Whitman, I don't know if he ever even talked about that, but in my mind, I was like, fuck, that must have been such a crazy thing for like a teenage, like aspiring poet or like wordsmith to just experience. Like, what a strange time.
Yeah. But, wow. Yeah. That's wild. And that's where you got the name of the album from. That's great.
Yeah, the name of the song. Like the idea for the song was Walt Whitman, he's a like a printer's apprentice, kind of like his main job would be to test the ink. So he'd have to put down little phrases, little maybe in my mind, maybe that's where he first started putting down little lines of poetry just to have something there to test the ink, like some placeholder words.
Right. And
in my mind, it was like, oh, well, maybe he would have put down some of these phrases that his boss was talking about all the time with Elias Hicks. And so a lot of the lyrics in that song are like direct quotations of that Elias Hicks guy. That was a big Wikipedia rabbit hole. That was a whole day for me. And that was awesome. Like, it was so sick.
I'd like you to know I am the type that is currently on the Elias Hicks Wikipedia page after you said
man.
It.
Get it.
And I am definitely going to dig into this. Because even I'm on a quick glance here. A, I like the fact that he's from Long Island.
There you go.
And Walt Whitman was from Long Island. That's kind of like a local thing. But this man seemed really subversive for the time.
Radical. I mean, like, totally radical.
Yeah, anti-slavery activism. You know, and this is in 1778. So, I could see why Whitman was, or I guess his boss was attracted to it.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. Who knows? Like, I guess, you know, in order to write a, you know, something like Leaves of Grass, you need a deep understanding of all walks of life, right? So maybe this is
That's a great way to put it. That's a great way to put it.
That's awesome. I was wondering, you know, because I had been listening to a lot of Rap Boys the last couple of days and came away with a very nice feeling when I listened to your music and usually pretty introspective. And I was wondering, what do you want people? Like, you finish a Rap Boys record, you sit back. What do you want people to feel? Like, what do you want people to think? Like, what's your intention? And what would you want people to come away with?
Mm. Oh, I mean, exactly what you described there. I love when people just come to their own conclusions about the music and the art they consume. And I love when people like compare those thoughts to somebody else who listened to the same record and they're like, oh, I got themes of, you know, this and loneliness and somebody else is like, oh, well, I got like this other kind of through line going through. I think it's important to kind of have the time to digest it on your own.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's a really good question. I honestly feel like maybe subconsciously I've thought about these things, but I've never really like spoken to that. I think something that's coming to my mind is like, it would be really nice if people feel like they've been like heard somehow. And I don't really know how that works because it's kind of the opposite. I'm like kind of telling my experiences or sharing some sort of truth that's coming from me, but
right,
if there's any way that people could feel like just like whole or just like kind of seen and heard after they listen to our music, not even in like a profound, like philosophical way or anything, just like feel a little bit more like, I don't know, like just themselves.
Like relatable.
Yeah. Just feeling, well, the first thing I got to say this, God, I hope people don't get bored. That's like the main goal is have people feel like, yeah, like that was a cool, right. You know, like that was exciting or that was worth my time. But yeah, I think, God, there's something that I'll kind of have to keep working toward is just, I don't know, making people feel like more alive, I guess, is kind of the goal.
Fuck yeah, that's awesome. Well, the direction is stoner metal is the perfect
way. Yeah, man. Good call.
Acoustic awesome. Stoner metal.
Julia, Dave, appreciate you taking all this time for us. That was fun.
Oh,
and I've really enjoyed digging into your tunes a lot the last week. I've, you know, listened to you all and gotten into it previously, but I hadn't dug in this deep, and it's really cool stuff. I really appreciate what you're doing and look forward to everything you come up with.
Thank you so much. Thanks for, thanks for digging in. Thanks for inviting us on the show. We've really been looking forward to it. So,
awesome.
Yeah, we appreciate you.
We're flattered. Great.
Well, have a beautiful Chicago spring, and hopefully I'll see you soon.
Yo, same to you, New Jersey spring, Manhattan spring, and yeah, hope to cross paths.
All right.
Oh, Brad. Oh, yeah. You ever want to talk like you're from the Midwest when you get off? Oh, yeah. Real good then.
You mean from
How's
Canada?
How's the Radisson? It's reasonable.
I just. What is that? You're going for Wisconsin there?
That was a quote directly from Fargo, from the film.
I haven't seen it in so long.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
Another one of these bands that really, like, timing-wise, got, I mean...
Dude, that record...
On. Your record comes out literally February 28th, 2020, like a week before Rudy Gobert Day. That's tough.
And it's I mean, Printer's Devil was the most recent record, right?
Yeah, well, they did the re-release recently, but yeah, it was the last, like...
Because that record is so good, like...
Yeah.
And I think it, like, also got really well-received.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you're talking about those fucking jokers over it.
I just, yeah, it's what all these bands are going to have to balance doing now is, like, okay, we took 2 years. You've all known the record this long. Like, once we get back on the road, are we touring this record? Are we touring a new record? Do we have to write a new record to tour?
Like, you know, I think, you know? Like, if you think about how it works, like, it could actually, for these bands, could kind of work in their favor because, you know, like, I mean, obviously they haven't been around. They don't have, I mean, well, they have been around for a while. They got a few more records. But, you know, like, you release a new record and then you tour it, and people really want to hear the old stuff, probably, you know, for the most part. Now, you know, they release these... All these bands have released records before the pandemic and haven't had a chance to tour them, but people have been listening to them, and now those are
that's
the record they're going to want to hear.
So, that's true. Yeah, you won't. But maybe the opposite happens internally for the band, where you're like, you know, one of the most fun things is to go out and play your new songs on tour.
Right.
You know, but now if they're like 2 years old, you're starting to get kind of bored of them.
Yeah, but think about this. Think about like just playing your fucking new songs in front of your iPhone to nobody, on like a stream. And then all of a sudden doing them in front of an audience, like you'll fucking have an orgasm.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. This could pan out. Yeah. Well, I hope it does. They saw they have, you know, like everybody's trying, you know, piecing together dates in like 2022. I'm really starting to feel bad for bands now because... I mean, if you're a headlining level band looking to like, you know, start to reserve some venues for shows, I mean, you're already like a year and a half out. So if you're a band who like wants to err on the side of caution and, you know, wants to take it slow to make sure people are safe, you're kind of screwing yourself until 2023. Yeah. And I just spoke to an artist friend of mine who works in galleries and stuff. Apparently the same thing's going on in the art world where, you know, everybody had these galleries and things that were ready to go. Everything got pushed back a year. So now there's just this like glut where there's not enough places to show and people can't have their galleries. So,
you know, I'll say though, that here in New York, where we have all this, we've got a really bad vacancy rate on commercial real estate here. There is a lot of pop-up galleries happening all over the place.
That's nice.
Because there's a lot of empty storefronts.
Well, maybe that's the future, right? It's kind of this pop-up model, like having a brick and mortar gallery and actually paying rent, even when you're not having exhibits every month, maybe doesn't make sense anymore, but renting out a storefront for a couple months.
And I mean, if you think about it,
reasonable.
It kind of works with the model. I mean, because you put up a show, it stays up for a month or two, right? So like switching locations every time you switch shows could actually work to your benefit. You know, if you need a larger space for a particular artist, you find a larger space.
That's true.
Hope.
I hope it works out that way.
Hope.
Brad, when you were a young... when you were a young white kid in Massachusetts, you must have had some level of Notre Dame gear at some point, right?
Oh, so, you know, I was born in Indiana.
Oh, okay.
I have family that went to Notre Dame. I used to have like, what did I have? I don't know. I had some Notre Dame like tchotchkes and stuff because I had, I think two of my uncles went to Notre Dame.
So crazy. This little just like Catholic college in Indiana became this like, you know, became something like that. The Irish. People are wild. People are wild.
It is pretty weird.
I had no history with Notre Dame. My dad used to tell me about the CCNY college basketball team who took on Adolph Rupp's Kentucky team and like shit like that.
Right.
So I was being bred with like CCNY basketball, not Notre Dame. But yo, fuck Joe Montana.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Come on. What is that? I'm really mad about that. I heard that story like 2 years ago and I think about it probably like once a week and in my head just go like, you know what? Fuck Joe Montana. I don't even care if Rudy's a dick. You know? I don't. Yeah,
he should have kept his mouth shut, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's just, don't aim down, man. You know? Don't aim down. Like, why don't you say something about Jerry Rice? Something with some real, you know, real implications for your life. Do you think Joe Montana is listening 90 minutes in to the Rat Boys Going Off Track episode? Like, if I got a tweet from Joe Montana calling me a fucking asshole, my first reaction would be like, wow, Joe Montana listens to Going Off Track in 90 minutes. Not only listen to the Rat Boys episode, but the made outro. It to the outro.
The outro. You know?
Good for you, Joe.
Well, listen, I really do like that latest record of theirs. I think.
Yeah, me too.
It's a really pleasant, it's sonically, it's the kind of stuff I like to hear. And you should listen to that. You should follow the band at Rat Boys Band on Twitter and Instagram, Rat Boys Music on Facebook. Follow us, Going Off Track everywhere. Leave us a nice review on iTunes. Go to our patreon.com/goingofftrack and see what you can see. If you want to become a patron, join the team, join our basketball team.
Ooh, point guard, Brad. So thanks to everyone for tuning in this week. Thanks to Julie and Dave from the Rat Boys. Can't wait to see them and hear more. And everybody love everybody out there. And watch out for the earth. It's coming to get you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.